Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Mark Narducci of the Philadelphia Inquirer. In a few moments, we'll talk about the Sixers. Big showdown game five tonight with the Celtics at TD Garden in Boston. Our play-by-play call of the day. A slice of Major League Baseball history in Ontario last night.
Paxton ready. Here's the windup and the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a one-hop and a third. Seager's got it. Toss across. Ball game is over. James Paxton has just thrown a no-hitter. The big lefty is getting mobbed out of the mound. The lefty from Lander, British Columbia has thrown the sixth no-hitter in the history of the Seattle Mariners franchise. The young man from British Columbia throws a no-hitter against the Blue Jays.
And here's the slice of history. The man from British Columbia just became the first Canadian to ever throw a no-hitter in Canada. The game last night was at Rogers Centre in Toronto. And it's the first time ever that a Canadian-born and raised pitcher has thrown a no-hitter in Canada. James Paxton, no-hitter last night. That's courtesy of KIRO in Seattle, Cairo Radio. All right. I'm sure they know who Russell Wilson's wife is. Sierra? Is that it?
Correctamundo.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't name any hits. Maybe if I heard something, I'd know it. All right. Okay. Great to have you with us on this really beautiful day. This is a gorgeous day out today. But at some point, you got to go inside. When you do tonight, some of you may catch the Celtics and the Sixers tonight. Big game five tonight. Celtics have a chance to close it out. But if the Sixers win, now you get game six in Philadelphia and everything. If they win that, is on the table for Game 7. So here we go. Mark Narducci joins us from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Hello, Mark.
How you doing, Steve?
Doing really well, Mark. I really like Brett Brown as a coach. Not a little, a lot. But I thought the one mistake I've seen him make in the series so far was in Game 2 when he took T.J. McConnell out and put Ben Simmons in on a night where he wasn't playing well. And I thought it turned the game. He started McConnell last night. What is TJ doing that's making such a difference for them?
He's playing fearlessly, and he's not only providing a spark on offense, he's one of their best defensive players, too. He was on Rozier quite a bit. Rozier had his worst game of the series, and McConnell played just about 39 minutes last night. So he's done it on both ends of the floor. He's given the team some fire, and he's given them some toughness. I thought they were out-toughed by the Celtics the first three games, and even the Celtics admitted that last night that wasn't the case. The Sixers were the more physical and the tougher team.
I also thought the Celtics have done a really good job with their defensive rotations. When you've watched this play out, what have you liked about the Celtics' defensive rotations, and what adjustments have the Sixers had to make?
Well, what I liked most was that the Sixers have not been getting a lot of free shots at the three-point line, and that's the Celtics' game plan. Brad Stevens has said it. Hey, if Joel Embiid has to go one-on-one with our defenders, so be it, but we're not going to leave the point shooters. So they've done a pretty good job with that. Last night wasn't so much the case, and part of it was, too, with McConnell in there, it gives the Sixers two ball handlers to handle everything up. Ben Simmons doesn't have to do the brunt of everything, and I don't think it was any coincidence either that Ben Simmons had a pretty darn good game, too.
He did.
19 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists. So he still hasn't played like the Miami series Simmons or the regular end of the regular season Simmons, but he certainly had a good game last night. And again, part of that, I don't think he was burdened with as much of the ball handling duties.
Mark, you and I both know that Simmons has never played this many games in his life in a year because he sat out all of last year. LSU didn't even make the tournament the year before. Even if they did, it would only be, what, a fraction, 40% of what he's played now. Has there been any sign at all of him hitting a wall, or has he handled it pretty well?
No, I don't think that's the case. He is just an incredibly fine-tuned, conditioned athlete. And it's interesting. Last night, T.J. McConnell played just about 39 minutes, and Simmons played a little over 32. So take what that means or what you want. But I don't think he's hitting a wall. He's just not making shots. And that's been the problem all along with Ben Simmons, too. I think he's taken a little bit of a confidence hit in this playoff. I think it's taken him a while to adjust to the physical play. Miami tried to do it on him. He did adjust. Boston's done it even more. He hasn't quite adjusted yet. But I think Ben Simmons is going to be fine. But the shooting is always going to be the big problem with him until he proves otherwise.
Joel Embiid in this particular series. When you look at what kind of job have the Celtics done against a really talented player? I mean, really talented. Well, what kind of job have the Celtics done with him that at times has him a little bit off balance?
Oh, they've been up on him. They haven't gone as much for his fakes that he likes to do. And Aaron Baines, I think, is an underrated defender. And then when they get Baines off him, they put out one of the most underrated great players in the NBA. I mean, how many players can guard Joel Embiid and reject his shot as he did and guard Ben Simmons? I mean, that is tremendous versatility. And Al Horford is, you know, switched off between both of them. So the other thing is, and Embiid won't use it as an excuse, but that mask is really bothersome.
Has to.
He doesn't have 100% vision. You know, he's sweating in there all the time. He refused to use it as an excuse when we asked him on Sunday at practice about it. But that's certainly been a factor as well.
It has to bother him. I mean, it has to. There's just no way you can go through something like that. And you're right. You know, sweating underneath this thing and everything that goes with it, that has to bother him, Mark.
And it's hurting his vision. He's not seeing everything. That's the other thing. So, yeah, it's but despite that, you know, I think he's done well. People forget, too, you know, he missed all those games. He missed the beginning of the Miami series. I don't know about his conditioning even, if it's 100% at this point. And yet he keeps, you know, going along. He played over 35 minutes last night.
And then to Horford for a minute, I described him earlier in the week. I said, look, I remember when the Celtics signed him. I said, my goodness, they just went out and signed the definition of a pro's pro. Is that what Al Horford is to you?
He's a pro's pro, and it's amazing how many people, how revered he is. Not only by the players on the Celtics, he's revered by Brett Brown, who spoke glowingly about him, and obviously by Brad Stevens. And he's a guy who's not overly vocal, but when he talks, everybody listens. And he's just so unselfish. He's never complaining about shots. Now, a problem last night, he had 6 shot attempts. You can't have Al Horford having 6 shot attempts. He made 4 of them in a game, so that's something that Boston's certainly going to have to look at before Game 5 on Wednesday.
Look, if there's any team based on pure talent that can come back from where the Sixers are, it is the Sixers. They've got Embiid, they've got Simmons, they've got Šarić. I mean, they're a really good team, and the game's really close. Is Game 5 the one where if they get that, now the door really is wide open?
There's no question. I've often felt, Steve, that when a team gets up 3-0, all the pressure's on them.
Yeah.
And you know, the old cliche about you can play loose, you're down and all, but I think it intensifies. And if for some reason you lose on your home court now. That's why Boston, if they get the chance, they're going to step on the Sixers' face tomorrow, if they can, because they know if they let the Sixers up for air again, this could really, really get interesting. So, obviously, it's the key. I give the Sixers more than a puncher's chance in this game, too. We'll just have to see. Brad Stevens has been great at making adjustments, though, and he's proven he's one of the best coaches in the NBA. So we'll see what happens.
Mark, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for squeezing us in today. We really appreciate it.
Always good talking to you, Steve. Thanks.
Mark Narducci, Philadelphia Inquirer, back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Here's Adam Purdy with another example of how Purdy Insurance is different.
I was at home one Saturday when I got a call from a client who had just been in an auto accident with a rental car in Canada. After confirming that everyone was okay, I checked his policy and assured him that we had the proper coverages in place. Within a few minutes, I had his claim called in and he was back to enjoying his vacation.
Purdy Insurance has been answering calls like this for over 90 years.
Give Purdy Insurance a call today at 800-677-2478 to see what we can do for you.
Okay, great to have you with us. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Quick news and notes, then we'll get back talking about football scheduling here in a moment. Let's start with this. Celtics Sixers tonight. Latest Celtic out is Shane Larkin. Out indefinitely. Key bench player, especially a point guard. He's out. Baseball, Phillies and Giants tonight, 6:30 the airtime. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. And on WKOK.com, 7:05 first pitch. Aaron Nola was great last night. Again. Cubs lead the Marlins 10-1 top of the sixth inning. Tigers lead the Rangers 4-3 bottom of the sixth. In the top of the eighth inning, the White Sox lead the Pirates 4-2. Angels with a 4-0 lead at Coors against Colorado in the top of the fourth inning. Oakland, it is Houston and the A's scoreless. That game is in the top of the third. The Mets batted out of order today, and the Reds beat the Mets 2-1. That wasn't a joke. They did. The first thing, the Mets hit out of order. And Cleveland beat Milwaukee today 6-2. And David Price, who was scheduled to pitch tonight, but you know they already moved the rotation around. I want to say Eduardo Rodriguez is either here. I think maybe Porcello's going tonight. They say he's been sent back to Boston, and he has carpal tunnel syndrome. They say he's going to throw, let's see, a bullpen session tomorrow, and then the team will decide what to do next. But he's got carpal tunnel.
I don't know if you have to choose that between that or tendonitis. I don't know what would be worse. Either just doesn't sound too good.
I don't know. Well, I mean, here's a guy who started the season with 14 straight scoreless innings, looked great. And all of a sudden he started giving up runs left and right. So I don't know. He's given up 17 earned runs in his last 22 innings. Carpal tunnel. Here's another quick note. When I talk about basketball, and the same thing I do in football too. When I'm evaluating what I think a team can or can't do for a given season, I always look at their conference schedule because they aren't all created equally, as Nebraska found out this year in basketball. And down the stretch for Penn State last year, there was no big game for Penn State down the stretch because Nebraska fell apart. So after the back-to-back losses by a total of 4 points, Penn State didn't have a signature game to get itself right back into the hunt. Now, this year they've got that. They've got Wisconsin. Well, SB Nation took a look at the basketball schedules for the coming season. You know, this is Big Ten basketball schedules, the conference schedules. And in the conference schedules, you're going to play 20 games this year, which means you're going to play 7 home and aways and 6 one plays. According to them, and this is all the metrics that they're doing all these metrics. The toughest schedule in the Big Ten in basketball will be Purdue this year, according to their metrics. Michigan is second. Maryland third, Penn State fourth. Minnesota 5, Michigan State 6, Iowa 7, Nebraska 8, Indiana 9, Ohio State 10, Illinois 11, Wisconsin 12, Northwestern 13, and Rutgers 14. That's based on their metrics. That's why I look at, you know, to me, what are the crossover games? Crossover games are always really important in football. Who do you get in the crossover games? Well, Penn State this year, okay, they're at Illinois. All right. On a Friday night, so a short time, but it's Illinois. A game you would feel that Penn State going in would be the prohibitive favorite. And then the other two crossover games are Iowa at home, Wisconsin at home. So they got some meat on the bone, but both of them are at home. And they got Wisconsin late. Now let's get to the Pitt thing. Sandy Barber naturally was asked about this last night. This is because the caravan, it's only 3 days this year. It's 3 stops, New York, Philly, Washington. But it does give everyone a chance to get access and to really ask all the questions you can think of with one-stop shopping. Patrick Chambers was there last night. You know, Dwayne Anderson's going to be leaving the program to become the director of basketball operations at Villanova, things like that. All right, so all that's happening. All right. And so news like that, you know, gets out there, but also it was an opportunity once again to ask Sandy Barber about Pitt. And I think Rick, when he called the show in last hour, I think reflected the feeling in the eastern half of the state. If you're east of Altoona, if you had to pick any opponent, and again, this is my experience of speaking of Williamsport, speaking in Scranton, I've gone to Wilkes-Barre, Harrisburg, Philadelphia, Delaware County, Franklin County. I mean, I've been all over the state. Lewistown I've gone to, Huntington I've gone to. Obviously going to Sunbury, Hazleton. And everywhere I've gone in the eastern half of the state, if they had to pick one opponent, most people, not all, but most people say, hey, how about putting Notre Dame on there? If you go from Altoona west, they want Pitt. She made the statement, Sandy Barber, that based on how things are right now with the Big Ten schedule with 9 conference games and only 3 openings, that the earliest that really they could conceive putting Pitt back on would be 2030. The earliest. She didn't say Pitt was going to be on in 2030. It was the earliest they could consider it. And as I pointed out, and I'll continue to point out, I don't want Penn State to be, again, I don't want Penn State to be in Iowa's position. Iowa has to play Iowa State every year. That does nothing to help them. It does. It makes no. If they beat Iowa State, the rest of the country yawns. Now in Iowa, you know, they can jump up and down over in Sioux Falls and, you know, and in Des Moines. Hey, okay, great, right? But you're playing for big stakes now. Getting into the college football playoff is huge. Okay, there are 2 levels. Getting to a New Year's Six game is huge. Now, Penn State's done that back-to-back years. Getting to a college football playoff game, wow. Now you're playing for the national championship. How do you get there? Say what you will about Ohio State, but look at the last 2 years. Ohio State's non-conference home and away was Oklahoma. Now, Sandy Barber and James Franklin did not choose to play Pitt. They inherited the series. Dave Joyner put that together. It was originally 2 years, and then he extended it to four. And Dave, I understand exactly why Dave wanted to do it. There's still people that thought that as of right now, Penn State would be a bastion of mediocrity in football because of the sanctions. So they wanted to put some excitement into the schedule and do that. Well, now Penn State's playing for titles.
Wishing you could go back to your teens is a nice thought.
Wishing you could buy a brand new 2018 car priced in the teens is unheard of.
Not at Sunbury Motors Kia.
Wanna see you in a Kia.
It's 20 under 20.
20 vehicles for under 20 grand. Sunbury Motors Kia has 20 new 2018 Kia Rios, Optimus, Souls, and Fortes for under $20,000. Sunbury Motors Kia makes it easy to own a brand new 2018 Kia.
20 under 20.
Don't get badgered by other dealers. Sunbury Motors Kia can get you into a 2018 Kia for under 20 grand.
You can go back to your teens.
Plus, all have Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. And SMC has over 25 certified pre-owned Kias to choose from, too. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf, and at sunburymotorskia.com.
Offer expires 531-18. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. No show coming up tomorrow because the Phillies will be in action with the getaway day game against the Giants at Citizens Bank Park. We'll be back on Friday with plenty to talk about. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. When we come back on Friday, Greg Wyszynski is going to join us. And at that moment, we will know who the final four teams are because Nashville will play against Winnipeg tomorrow night in Tennessee. Tampa Bay is already set against Washington. Vegas is awaiting the Winnipeg-Nashville winner. We'll also know about what the fate of the Sixers happen to be. They play tonight against the Celtics. And then the Mystic from the East will join us as well, who now is developing a rather large fan following in our area. Frankly, you're not surprised.
No, that's no lie. That's legit.
I mean, he does. He's got a lot of...
He's racking them up one at a time, man.
Yeah, anytime I'm there, I go by, I go, hey, how's your brother doing? I love your brother. I'm like, okay.
Multi-state fan base. Who'd have thought 2 years ago, huh?
So here's the bottom line. I mean, it's getting to the point where I'm wondering a year from now if I'm going to be on the final half hour Fridays as the guest, and he'll be on the rest of the week.
I could have sworn you're the one that said a couple of summers ago, hey, he could do my show.
I did.
You did.
Yeah. So.
Seconds after you came up with the idea, live on air, hey, it's called, let's pick some football games. Let's bring my brother on.
Yeah.
I said, yeah. It's worked out great.
Now I go, how's your brother's? I mean, loving your brother's song. Your brother's, yeah. It's like, oh, okay, great. It's terrific. It's going really well.
Well, you were telling me earlier this week, what you did last weekend, you were going outdoor furniture shopping, you know, some rocking chairs, but you end up getting more chairs than what you first expected. I'm thinking, maybe one of those chairs was for our weekly 435 guest, whatever.
No.
Well, for the grandkids.
No. It's... She thinks big.
For ambiance. I mean, Outback ambiance.
I think we need four. I'm like, oh, four, okay.
Okay.
All right. Now, my thought is, okay, four is one thing. All right, that's fine.
Nice even number.
All right.
So, but so is two.
I also had to assemble four of them. I said, I don't want to assemble four of them.
Well, you got through the first one, then it was downhill from there.
So. Yeah, once I got through the first one, you know, looking at the directions, man, I'll tell you, that looks kind of looks like French. It is French. Okay. You flip it to the other side. Oh, look, it's English. Tremendous. I can figure it out now. Then the last three took as much time as the first one did. That's how quickly it went. But Pitt, it's something that, again, the genesis of the Pitt series returning. Penn State was going into the sanctions. They did not know what to do about scheduling. Didn't know what to do. Now it's like, geez, now what do you want to do? I mean, for example, nothing had been signed, but BYU was going to sign something for a home and away with Penn State, and then they called up and they said, and BYU didn't back out, okay? BYU did not back out, okay? So you understand. They said, hey, look, what do you want us to do here? And again, Penn State doesn't know where it's going with its football program, in 2012. They don't know what's going on. So they kind of took that and they waylaid it and said, nah, maybe not now. And probably not ever. And finally, Dave Joyner came up with the idea of, like, let's start getting some of the regional teams back on. So you notice in 13 they opened with Syracuse at the Meadowlands. They got Pitt back on the schedule. They got West Virginia back on the schedule. So, that's what they were trying to do, regionalize the schedule, bring back some of the old rivalries, thinking that that would be, again, you got to remember the mindset in 2012. And the first with Pitt was home and away in 16-17. Then in 13, they advanced it to a four-game series, adding in this year 18 and then 19 next year at Beaver Stadium. The entire world thought that Penn State was going to be in a world of hurt, and it might take them, there are some opinions, not all, it would take them 10 years to get back. The NCAA then did something unprecedented. They then started rolling back sanctions. They have never rolled back sanctions on anyone ever before. And there are really good reasons why they rolled back the sanctions. We're not going to get into that because I think it's pretty obvious to anybody who's been around here what the reasons happen to be. And James Franklin stepped in, and this guy not only got them back on track and in his third year gets into a Big Ten championship in the Rose Bowl, but now he has laid such a great foundation here, along with his staff, that Penn State is now built again for the long term. And that's what's been so great about this. Not only the quick ascent to the top, but they're not a one-hit wonder. They've brought themselves back now, back-to-back New Year's Six bowl games. Well, Penn State has not had back-to-back New Year's Six bowl games since 85 and 86. Do you realize that? 85-86 is the last time the Orange Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl that Penn State played in back-to-back New Year's Six games. So they do this, and not only that, it's sustainable. They have built this for the long haul. They are now at the point where they can properly redshirt people. play them. They don't have to play anybody ahead of schedule. You know, certain situations will come up with injuries or things like that where, hey, they may have to, okay, because that's just the nature of the game. But they've built it for the long haul. I mean, I think they're going to be really good again this year. Really good again this year. They're going to play a tough schedule. They're going to play a really tough schedule. They got Wisconsin at home, Iowa at home, to go with Michigan State and Ohio State at home, at Michigan. You got Maryland at home. So now let's get to the Pitt part of it. You don't know how these things play out. You just don't know. Remember when Penn State got Central Florida on the schedule? And the first game was at Beaver Stadium. And then, of course, the second one ended up being in Ireland. Well, it turned out they had this quarterback by the name of Blake Bortles. See, again, you don't know the timing of things. You just don't know. I mean, sometimes you put a schedule together ahead of time, and all of a sudden you have to adjust it. I mean, do you realize, remember when Penn State played the night game with Rutgers? And it was the first ever Big Ten game for Rutgers. Remember that? In 2014, I want to say. Was it 14? I think it was. It's 2014. James's first year. Right? Do you know what that game was supposed to be? I have all sorts of scheduling fun facts that a lot of people I don't think realize. That game was supposed to be Nebraska as a non-conference game at Nebraska. And then Nebraska got into the Big Ten. So they replaced it with Rutgers. And then Rutgers got in the Big Ten. So they just kept it as a conference game. All right. Now let's bring it back to Pitt. You don't know how things are going to play out 4, 6, 8, 10 years from now. So part of scheduling is guesswork. Virginia Tech's been really good over the years. Justin Fuente's coming off a really good year. Really good year at Virginia Tech. It looks like they're on decent footing there. Looks like they got a chance to be a good long-term program. He stepped in. He's done a good job replacing Frank Beamer. Well, that's the 2020 game. Okay. Then they've got Auburn home and away in 21 and 22. You only have that one opening. See, it's only the one opening because you want to have 7 home games. Dick in Milton joins us. Hey, Dick, how are you?
I'm good, Steve. I was driving down the road, and I heard you talking about football schedules and conferences a little bit like the Big Ten. I have a question for you. You know how everybody has a conference championship, and most everybody's in a conference in Division One, but they also have overall national overall sports, like for men and women. And I was thinking about it. You know, Stanford is usually at the top almost every year.
Yeah, the Learfield. You're talking about the Learfield director standards.
Right. So basically,
yeah.
You know, there they are, this West Coast school. And I was thinking about, wonder why that is. And I think it's, and for me, it's, I think a little bit of it's because they're such a good academic school in the West, and a lot of those kids that are really good students and stuff, I'm not saying they don't stay at those state schools out there, but a lot of them come east. Because Stanford is good at almost everything. I mean, they're just more than competitive, too. There has to be a reason.
One of the reasons that Stanford is across the board in a Learfield director standing every year is they're good at every season. They have really good women's soccer, good football. Okay, obviously they're really good in men's soccer. They're really good at swimming, men's and women's. Really good in track and field. Really good in softball. Very good in baseball. I mean, in other words, every season, and basketball, obviously, they've been very good,
Women's
basketball.
Also.
Yeah, women's volleyball, they're great. Women's basketball, they're great. So every season, they have a series of sports in every season that seem to be able to get them Learfield director's points, where they may not be good in everything, but they've got 2 or 3 sports in each season of the year, spring, winter, and fall, that allows them to garner points to do it. And that's been the key for them over the years. Penn State doesn't quite have, in the spring, enough to vault them over the top to make it. You know, I mean, obviously, to go through the fall and the winter, Penn State's second. But it's the spring where Penn State doesn't quite get over the top.
I mean, I don't know that they win it. They're the most outstanding college every year, but they have to be in the top two or three or four or five
every year.
I just got thinking about
it's remarkable.
My God, that's kind of unique for all the colleges, the Division I schools that are that played so many sports, and there they are every year. So, and I think a lot of it is because there is their academics. You look how many kids come to good academic schools. They come east to go to some of these schools. And probably the cream of the crop kids, some of them that good academically, just stay and go to Stanford. I'm not telling you UCLA or Washington or some of those schools don't have really good academics. I don't really mean it that way. But they don't.
And I both know Stanford's exceptional academically, though.
Well, they are. That's what I meant. I wondered if that contributed a little bit to how many good kids they get in every sport on the West Coast.
That's a good question. That's something that I have to explore. That's a really good question and an interesting way of going about it. And I don't know what the answer is. And I know, I don't think anybody around here has the answer to it. But I'll say this. They do have a commitment to it. They have a commitment to a lot of different sports. And you see that Stanford every year seems to be a couple of sports in the fall, a couple sports in the winter, and a couple of sports in the spring where they're right there in the thick of the national championship race. I think that's what helps vault them over the top.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I was just driving along, and you were talking about the Penn State schedule and how many teams you have to play out of conference. And it just hit me about Stanford being at that level and so many things
I'll tell you right now, I know it's a West Coast trip, and West Coast trips aren't easy. I wouldn't mind if Penn State played a home and away with Stanford in football. I think that'd be a really good two-game series.
Have we played them in football for a long time in anything?
Haven't played them in football. Well, the last time we played them in football was the Blockbuster Bowl in 92. But in terms of a home and away, it's been since like 75, 76. The last time I can remember Penn State playing a home and away with Stanford.
And I'll be quite truthful. I don't see a lot of West Coast teams coming in here to play their non-league games. Most of the time, those teams want to play somebody at home. I mean, because of the revenue. But I see Stanford play Notre Dame, but I don't know how many teams they play in anything in the East Coast. I'll say east of the Mississippi on a regular basis.
Well, you've got to remember Stanford and USC, who both play Notre Dame.
Right.
They both play Notre Dame. They're also in the same boat the Big Ten is. They have to play 9 conference games in the Pac-12. So now they don't have the flexibility. See, everything comes down to scheduling flexibility. And if you have 9 conference games, you dramatically lose scheduling flexibility. The SEC and the ACC can maneuver a bit better than the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the Big Ten can.
Well, okay. It was just a question. Thanks a lot, Steve.
No, it's a great question, Dick. Thanks.
Bye.
It's a great thought. Great thought. Come back. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Interesting. Chris Letang, who's gone through a lot. I mean, the guy that's when you've had a stroke as one of your issues. I mean, that's a lot. He has vowed he wants to be a Penguin the rest of his career. And it was interesting that in the clean out yesterday of the locker rooms and so forth, he got a lot of support from coaches, teammates. Right? Mike Sullivan couldn't have been more glowing about what Chris Letang means as a person and as a professional on the team. Now let's go to the other end. Phil Kessel was the only member of the Penguins who didn't speak to the media following Game 6, and he was not at the locker cleanout yesterday. Now, he's supposed to be back with the team, but they asked about his health, and, Jimmy Rutherford said, hey, look, he had to deal with a whole bunch of things and so forth that kind of carried over the playoff. Mike Sullivan, He was dealing with bumps and bruises just like the other guys. It was nothing significant, I can tell you that. Well, okay. You know, I Mike is a salty Boston area direct to the point guy.
Yeah, I was kind of waiting today or tomorrow or sometime this week. Okay,
nope.
What was Phil dealing with? What kind of kids? Yeah, now the truth comes out. Okay, wow, this guy was playing with like an ACL or an MCL for like a month. So,
well, as Josh Yowie wrote in The Athletic, Sullivan's tone was difficult to ignore. Hey, look, Penn State, Pitt, and like I said, 5-6 years from now, who knows where Auburn is, where Pitt is, I don't know. But just on a piece of paper, having Auburn come into Beaver Stadium in 2021, I already know people are juiced up about it. It's different. They're SEC. They play big games. It's exciting. That's got juice to it. It also has national implications. ESPN game day is going to, I don't care whether they're here or not, they're going to look like, hey, big game, Penn State, Auburn, check that out. Pitt doesn't move the needle nationally.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.